Welcome to Sometimes Video Games. I'm Adam, and this is the Sometimes Video Games podcast. I am joined, as per usual, by the lovely Charlie Walsh. How are you?
It me. Hello, how are you?
It your boy.
It your boy.
I'm not bad. Again, I'm not too bad. Not too bad. I'm doing okay.
I was about to say the story off air, but I thought I'd at least say it on air because it is video
Good.
game related, so I thought I would save it for now.
Yes.
So we were discussing Brahmin in Fallout, the Fallout universe, and their traits and their wants to accost people.
Yes.
When in year 10 or 11, I can't remember when it
You
was. I
were
think it was 10.
accosted by a radioactive cow.
No, I was accosted by a goat once, but that's a different story. I had an operation, which meant I couldn't basically walk for like 3 months.
Beautiful.
And so most of the time I was just for like 3 months, almost 3 months solidly, I was just lying on the sofa by myself, playing various video games, but one of which was Fallout 3, and I got super into it, and I had like a save file of hundreds of hours and everything else. And my uncle, who I don't see super often because he lives far away, he came over just to see how I was and stuff. And he's not into games. He what he likes to do is whenever I see him, he has memorized the name of another game, and then will just say it at me quite proudly.
Yes, I think I remember you saying something like
And he does the same with wrestlers as well. So he'll
that.
go, "Oh, John Cena," or "Oh, Assassin's Creed," and I'll be like, "Yeah, that's the game." He's the best. But he'd come over, and I was playing Fallout at the time. And we were talking, and I was sitting playing Fallout. He was talking to my mum or whatever. And then when a Brahmin came on screen, he just went, "Oh, it's got two heads." And every time I've seen a Brahmin since, I could just hear him in my head just go, "Oh, it's got two heads." Just in this really, like, nothing else had fazed him at all, but just the two-headed cow just really just done something to his brain.
I like it.
But yeah,
I
I was
enjoy
gonna
it.
say that off air, but I thought, it's vaguely video game related, so we'll keep it.
It
But
is.
yeah,
It's also pretty fun. Perfect
I'm fine.
podcast
I'm fine,
material.
thank you.
Good, I'm glad. Also joined by Louis Birtwistle. How are you today, Louis?
Hello.
Yeah. Are you good? You doing good?
I'm all right, mate.
Lovely.
I am involved with the Falling Out game.
I am
Oh.
involved.
You're falling out with someone?
I love Thanks for the Memories.
The Fallout Boy song.
I've been playing some Fallout 4.
Thanks for the MMRs.
The MMRs, yes.
You've been playing Fallout 4? Why have you been playing Fallout 4, Lou?
Because I wanted to build stuff,
That
man.
seems accusatory more than anything, doesn't it? How
What you
dare you play
what
Fallout
you been
4?
playing Fallout 4 for?
You wanted to build stuff, so you decided to play the shooter RPG Fallout 4.
Well, yeah, I don't. It's not really. It's a bit more than that. It's also a settlement builder.
I guess.
Like, the settlement building's a huge part of the game.
I ignored it entirely. So I don't know. I can't tell you.
I honestly think the people who ignore it are actually missing out, honestly.
I started doing it and then I decided that I hated it, so I decided to ignore it.
See,
That's
what happened is I started doing it, and then what I realized is that I fucking thought it was dog shit, so I stopped.
basically, I was like, oh, Preston Garvey was like, oh, you should do the settlement building thing. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, yeah, I'll do the settlement building thing. Cool. And then, like, an hour later, I was like, I really don't like doing this anymore. I'm just gonna go and never
I
interact with it
liked.
again.
See, so my girlfriend, similarly to Louis, got really into it. And her settlements were wild. Not as wild as Louis's been showing us some of his settlements he's been making, which are on a whole nother level. But
I'm in the middle of making a new one right now.
yeah, I know, I'm watching. But she made some wild ones as well that were pretty cool. But I had a similar reaction to you, Adam, to some extent. I mean, I liked it. I did genuinely enjoy it and I liked the idea, but just couldn't find myself caring enough. And I think that the worst part for me was as someone who's like for example, when I played Fallout 3, I would like meticulously collect practically everything that had any value, right? I like min-max that game to the point where I could memorize exactly how much like every random piece of fucking trash and junk you can find would be worth. And like, so like when I'm going through a vault, an abandoned vault or whatever, and I see a fork or whatever, I'd be like, oh, that's worth three, so it's worth picking up. But and then I'd go through and like min-max exactly like
it's my, worth my three so oh, it's worth picking up
off. Well, that's worth picking up.
I'm not saying it was worth three. I'm just saying a random number and saying it was worth picking up. But the point would be that I would have like a fucking min-max like rucksack with exactly like the most amount of money you could make from any location without being encumbered and everything. And it was like, and like, I knew it all. And that was the way I always played Fallout, right? So when I started playing Fallout 4 the first time around, and to some extent the second time around, that innate want within me to just min-max it came over. But because everything now had some intrinsic value because you could make shit with it,
yeah,
I really struggled not to just try and collect everything from these places. And I found myself going back and forth between the main place, I can't remember what it's called, where you're like pre-war, where you're... No, the pre-war place where you live.
Oh, the place where you... Yeah, sure.
Hey, not Haven. I can't remember what it's called, but you know what, you know.
Sanctuary Hills.
That's the one. Thank you very much. And I found myself encumbered with every single item from like a fucking building that I'd looted, like every single thing inside it, just encumbered. And honestly, I would spend 45 minutes walking in a straight line with just all of this shit in my back because it just all had intrinsic value. And that was the point where I was like, okay, I need to put it down. And then the second time around, I was doing something similar, but I just couldn't get, but I always found that I had just not enough materials. And like, because I was because I was actively trying not to do that. And then I was like, these like places were just constantly getting bloody raided. And like, they were like asking for stuff and they were all sad. It was like, and I just didn't have the like materials to build the stuff they needed for like defense or for whatever. And it was just, it was a pain in the ass. I like the idea. I like the idea of sort of rebuilding civilization in a post-apocalyptic place. I quite like that. But
so what I do is the way I did it is that I, for whatever settlement I wanted to go for first, I would collect all the scrap that I physically could until I was almost like over encumbered. I would give like all my weapons to my companion and I'd just keep all the junk on my own inventory. And then whenever I'm almost over encumbered, I would fast travel to the settlement. And I would store it all in the workbench.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. But, like obsessively and terribly.
So, yeah, the thing is with the settlement building this game is that it takes a lot of time, but as a result, I find it's... I just think, as a result of that, it's very rewarding.
I can see how you'd think that. I can definitely see why you'd find it rewarding. I think... A lot of I've only played Fallout 4 through once, and I think a lot of the time I was playing Fallout 4, I literally didn't I just wanted to do the like the game bit, like I just wanted to do the game and do the story and then get it done with, because I sort of got bored of doing all the side stuff in that game, which is weird because I don't typically get bored of doing side stuff in these kind of games. Like, for example, I've been playing Skyrim again on and off, not lots and lots, but like. I love just wandering. I don't even have to do a quest in Skyrim. I can just wander from place to place and be perfectly fucking happy. But there's something weird about when I switch to Fallout and I'm just like, right, I've got to go do the quests now.
The thing is with Skyrim and why I think it's the better game is that it's because of the kind of the setting that it has. It's just going to be more diverse. Like... Yeah.
Visually,
from the get-go, you know, like, you know, there's lots of different terrain, lots of different scenery. Mm. There's just lots to explore in Skyrim, which is all unique and interesting. We're in Fallout, like, it, no matter what Fallout game it's going to be, it's going to be a city
or
a wasteland.
Do you like the color brown? Because I've got the game for you.
It is the brownest game going. And I feel like Fallout 4 is the most colorful as well. Like, every other game literally was brown because even the skyboxes were brown because That old skyboxes looked terrible.
Like, there's some areas. Like, there's an area in Fallout 3 that's very green. And Fallout New Vegas obviously has Vegas itself, which is very colorful.
The only color in the entire game.
That's true.
It's on the strip in.
But Vegas itself obviously is massive.
In Freeside.
But
always thought about this because, like I say, I got really, really, really deeply into 3. Mm. I've tried several times before now, and I've just never connected with it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and I think part of that's just because it's not as good as 3 and it's not as new as 3.
I mean, I believe it's not as good.
I think part of it potentially as well could just be like when you're talking about, like, you're happy to do side quests and, like, do all that sort of stuff and other things, but for some reason in Fallout it felt like a chore. And I've had a similar thought about a lot of games, and I wonder if part of it is because that's all games are now. Like, the vast majority of games that come out now are open world side quest driven fucking hellholes, right? And I wonder if part of that is just, like, reduced our, like, capacity to just be bothered. Like, we're just like, I want to go through all of these again. And, like, I could go back to Fallout 3 and be perfectly happy in the same way you could go back to Skyrim and be perfectly happy. But I think
Fallout 3 also exists in that way. Because, Fallout 3 is the only Fallout game I've ever... Well, that's not fair, because I did get to the end of Fallout 4. But Fallout 3 is the only game that I played all the way through and was happy to just play it all the way through, and there was no issues. And I've played it through twice now. Like, that's...
But what I'm saying is... So what I'm saying is I think part of that, for me at least, is nostalgia. Like, I'm willing to forgive Fallout 3, for example, for the shit I wouldn't forgive Fallout 4 for, because I remember enjoying Fallout 3.
Yeah, maybe.
And I go, oh, I enjoyed this. And so I sit there and I'll do the same thing. And it would be the same thing I wouldn't forgive Fallout 4 for.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I enjoyed this before. I still enjoy it now. Whereas, again, I play any other game that comes out now and I'm like, can I be fucking arsed? And it's the same thing, like, so I haven't played many games this week, right? I've played a couple, one notably that we'll probably get onto because Louis will have opinions. But one of the things I've been doing is I've been finishing off Mass Effect 2, finally.
Oh, sure. I need to get onto
Mass Effect 3. I will fucking happily sit. I've spent maybe this week hours of my life. I don't know how many, but probably closing in on 10, just scanning planets.
Oh my god,
I'll put a podcast on, and I don't think it's good, I don't think it's engaging, I don't think it's useful, I think it's a massive waste of time. But for some reason, I will sit here and scan planets where I would not do that in any other game. I would not forgive it in any other game, but for some reason, because it's in Mass Effect 2, and I did it as a kid, and my brain goes, yeah, this is fine, I do it. Whereas in any other game, I'd be like, what the hell am I doing?
I reckon you just enjoy it, because no, but I have the same thoughts and feelings towards Mass Effect 2 as you do. I really love Mass Effect 2. I think it's a great game. But, like, legitimately, the planet scanning is fucking dire, and I do not forgive it. I think
it's the dumbest thing in the world, and it doesn't make any sense.
At the time, people maybe forgived it for the planet scanning because they replaced the Mako stuff with it, and the Mako stuff was also pretty dire.
I think Mako is better than planet scanning. I think you're picking what foot to shoot yourself in, but I think the Mako stuff was better.
I think it's more interesting, but I also think that it's longer. Like, the Mako stuff is longer. You can get lost. Like, with the planet scanning, it's literally just like, I go to a planet, I do the scan thing, it's over and done with, whatever, bye, I can go do something else. With the Mako, it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to go on this planet now, and I'm going to spend the next, like, 20 minutes exploring this damn planet that has nothing on it with dodgy controls, you know?
You know what? Here's an outhouse with a couple of free friends.
Louis found some dead bodies in Fallout.
good.
But planet scanning is objectively the dumbest thing in the world. Like, I mean, not only is it...
Yeah.
Is it fucking just shit?
Yeah.
Like, and it just is. But it also makes no fucking sense. You go to, like, some... So, right, what's the planet? Ilium, the like Asari planet, right? Mm,
yeah.
And you go there, and then you search the rest of that like cluster or whatever, and none of those planets have been mined.
Mm.
And so you, your single ship, become a fucking intergalactic mining company and just drain every resource in the entire universe to get a slightly stronger shotgun. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Oh my God. Is that really a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's my God.
The dumbest thing in the world. And this yet for some reason,
game.
I will just sit and do it. I'll put on some music. I'll put on a podcast, some YouTube videos or whatever on my other screen. And I'll just sit and I'll just scan these planets.
Mm.
And I think part of it is also the incentive of like trying to upgrade your squad so they don't die in the final mission.
I think that is partially because you need to do it if you want the best ending, really, don't you? Like, you don't necessarily need to go all in and scan every planet and do whatever, but you definitely need to have engage with it on some level to get the best ending and make sure all of your squad survive.
Yeah. But it's dumb. Fucking dumb.
It is. It is. I don't know, because so like, it is. I don't know. I don't know whether I've ever been like that. You know, I'm a special case in that, like, most open world games I typically can't be bothered with anyway. So I that might be a thing, and like I know that, for example, Skyrim or, I mean. The Bethesda, the Elder Scrolls stuff specifically for me is a very odd and special case, I think, for in terms of open world games. But I enjoyed Fallout 3. I'll admit it took me a while to get into Fallout 3 originally because I found it so lonely. I think I've said that before. But I think Fallout 3 is a very good game. I think Fallout 4 is a fine game.
When did you first get into Fallout 3, do you reckon?
I mean, I got into Fallout 3 the moment I was given the freedom to explore.
But what about year wise? Because obviously, I was playing it when it first came out, right?
I don't think I played it. I don't think I played the game when it first came out, but I did play it like maybe a year or two.
I started playing Fallout 3 at about. I'd probably say like 2014, maybe 2013.
What's the release?
Yeah, 2013. I think 2013 was when I started playing Fallout 3.
I want to see the release list.
I want to say it came out either 2007 or 2008.
Do I have a timeline? I want a timeline. Timeline's probably not going to happen. Fuck me. Fallout 3 was released in 2008. When hey this can I just see the time a timeline of games released, please?
What are you? I can probably you can we can
Bethesda get, I mean, games yeah. released. There we go. This will work. I'm
Skyrim was 2011.
I'm not
Fallout was 2008, and then Oblivion was 2006.
Oblivion was 2006. I think I played Oblivion. Oblivion was the first. I think it's probably the first Western game I actually played and enjoyed, like in general.
That's a mad statement, but probably
it is a
accurate,
mad statement, but probably wild. Accurate. I'm not sure if it is entirely accurate. There's probably something else in there somewhere, but I think Oblivion was probably the first Western game I played.
Wasn't some of the early Sonics made in San Francisco?
Not that I'm aware of.
For some reason, my brain is saying I might be wrong about
maybe.
That.
I would count like Sonic 1, 2, 3 and Knuckles as Japanese games. Maybe they're American, I don't know, but like I would count those games as...
For some reason I have a feeling that the original Sonic people moved to San Francisco and started making them in San Francisco, but I could be wrong.
Well, Sonic is I'm trying to think, is Sega an American company?
Sega or Japan.
No, they're Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. There's your answer. Yeah.
No, I know. I'm just trying to think of any. You know, I was just like, and I know me and
thinking,
Adam both played Sonic when we were kids, and I was like, for some reason, I have a feeling that some of like the original Sonic people ended up moving to Sega of America and made games in San Francisco. I don't know why I'm thinking that. I honestly don't, and I don't know. It might not even been Sonic 1, 2, or 3. It might have been Adventure or some nonsense. Obviously Adventure, is it Adventure 1 or Adventure 2 where it has the opening cityscape? Because cityscape is in San Francisco, so.
Adventure 1, I think. I'm not entirely certain.
So it might have been that late, so I might be wrong about that.
I'm actually now just looking at stuff, but like, no, that's Japanese as well. I was like, maybe the Mickey Mouse game that came out on Mega Drive, but no, that's Japanese as well.
Or Castle of Illusion.
Yeah, yeah. I fucking love that game, by the way.
I hated it as a kid.
Oh, really?
For some reason. Shit. I had it and I just couldn't get past it, and it just I hated it for it. I was like, just let me do anything, and it was like, no. And
you know,
I probably
let's say Spyro. Let's say Spyro instead. Let's say I really enjoyed that, because that's a game I enjoyed.
That's American, yeah.
That's American. Fuck it, whatever. Let's just say Spyro.
Anyway, I understand what you mean. Yeah.
I remember playing Oblivion. I don't think I played it in... I didn't... I think I played the Game of the Year edition, which would have come out a year after its 2006 thing, so 2007. I am not entirely sure whether I played Fallout 3 on... I must have played Fallout 3 on release. I must have played Fallout 3, not on the exact day of its release, but like around October, maybe like November, December 2008. Maybe December 2008. Maybe I got it around Christmas time, like with some Christmas money. So maybe let's say I started it the beginning of 2009. Let's just say as a potential thought on that. But I found it, because everyone was talking about it at the time, I found it so lonely, you know. I played it and I just became sad.
Oh, it's massively fucking lonely, and for some reason I really connect with it for some reason. And I was playing it at the worst possible time as well, because I was literally fucking alone.
Yeah.
because I was in school or whatever, but like mum was a single mum or whatever, and she had to still go to work and stuff, so I was literally alone for like, I would fucking play Fallout, and then this is a sad indictment of my life was that time. I was playing Fallout, watching Jeremy Kyle, and then that was basically it for like 6-7 hours of the day.
Nice.
And I couldn't even move. I just had to lie there.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But for some reason I really connect with the fact it's super lonely, but it is a very, very lonely game.
I found it very, so coming from Oblivion,
it's oppressively lonely.
Completely like the opposite tonally. I mean, it is the opposite tonally.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah.
It's very comedic and stupid and silly. I really struggled with Fallout 3, just genuinely really struggled. There was a lot of the time where I just had to have the radio. Like, when I finally got through, like, started playing it, I had to have the radio on, like, all the time. I would play stealthily, because I couldn't... I like playing stealthy games. So I would play stealthily, and I'd just have the radio blasting all the way through, so everyone knew where I was. I'd specifically play unoptimally so that I could enjoy the game slightly more. Because,
well, if you don't, the soundtrack, if you don't have the radio on, is also really like,
it's sad.
Again, that whole game is really oppressively
lonely. It's really oppressively lonely, and I found I think I've mentioned, I may have mentioned before, I may not have mentioned, but I did play Fallout New Vegas when it came out as well. And I remember I played that like around the time it came out as well. I just didn't like it.
This is where I'm in the camp of people where I think Fallout New Vegas was the better game.
I think I wouldn't even go as far as to say it's camp of people. I'd say it's probably just most people's opinion, right? But
I think Fallout 3 was very good, but I feel like I connected with what New Vegas had to offer more than Fallout 3.
I think at this point, if you were to take a consensus, most people would probably agree that Vegas is the better game.
I think
that I am the same with Adam. Like, I, for some reason, I never connected with Vegas, and I've never gone back to it. I really want to go back to it at some point to give it a second/third try.
I've tried playing it multiple times as well. Like, I have literally, because people say it's the best game in the series, and I like Fallout 4, I like Bethesda RPGs, I have gone back to play Fallout New Vegas multiple times, and I get, like, to the same point every time, like, it's just, like, 3 or 4 hours into the game, and I just go, can't be bothered with this anymore. I'm just bored.
It's really weird. Because, again, I, like... And I understand people's arguments for why it's better as well. Oh, for sure. Just for some reason, I've never connected with it, and I don't know why for the life of me. I wish I had. I really, and I want, and like I say, I've never gone back to it since 2000. And when did it come out? It must have been about 2010, 11 when it came out. No, I think it was 2000.
It would be before then. Let's say
2010. I think it came out.
2010. Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, I've got the releases here. I haven't gone back to it since. Shit, just before Skyrim came out. I remember Skyrim coming out.
Before New Vegas and Skyrim? Oh.
Yes.
That doesn't feel right. Because Skyrim feels like such a jump up from...
But that's because it was made by different people, right? So...
I mean, true.
Well, was it? Because,
Vegas was Obsidian.
New Vegas is Obsidian, but it was using the same engine as Fallout
3.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. So it's made by different people, so like it's not got improvements.
But Fallout 3 wasn't made by Obsidian.
No.
Yeah, it's made by Vegas. Yeah, exactly.
Skyrim feels like such a big jump up from New Vegas.
Yeah.
Skyrim's on a different game engine. But I'm shocked that there's only a year difference.
Yeah, it's mad, but it was the case. And also Skyrim was like you're getting dangerously close to that time where at the end of the generation where people actually just have their shit together and know what they're doing.
I mean, the PS4, I don't know. The next game that Bethesda released was Dishonored, so it doesn't really...
and that wasn't even made by Bethesda, so... Yeah. But I mean, it's PS4 and Xbox One were 2013, so...
Mm. Well, I have to admit, to be honest, I thought Dishonored was really good.
I enjoyed bits of Dishonored. I didn't play it enough, but I enjoyed Dishonored to some degree.
I played it quite aggressively. But I only played Dishonored when it became free on one of the Xbox monthly things.
Oh, sure. I think I bought it because I'm not sure if it was the EGX. I think I went to this EGX with a friend. We went to Eurogamer Expo. I think it was called Eurogamer Expo at the time. And Dishonored demo was on there. I played it. I really enjoyed the demo. And I was like, you know what? This sounds like a good... Yeah, I think I wrote for it in Game Grin or something. Not Grim, Grim Games. They're the same thing. GG.
but not the bad one.
Not the bad one. Yeah, I think I remember writing about the demo for it and being, you know, oh, this looks cool. This is interesting. People should be talking.
You're not worth a Game Grin anymore, do you?
No, I do not know.
All right, so we can shit on them. Great.
I mean, I guess. Sort of. You may have missed it. I think it was last week when we were talking about not being paid for jobs with Christina and stuff like that.
Bit
of shitting on people.
Oh, really? So what? Have you burnt bridges with them then?
I guess so. I don't know. I still talk to some of the people who write there, but not the editors or anything.
I mean, from what I heard, I mean, from what you were telling me, I don't think I ever liked them, to be quite honest. With the stories that you were telling me, and I'm like, that's kind of very manipulative, very, very scumbaggy, very dishonest.
Not dishonored.
Not the kind of ethics that I believe in.
I agree.
But yeah, I think Bethesda Game Studios, the next game was Fallout 4, so.
So the Skyrim.
Then Fallout 4.
Fallout Shelter, Fallout 4, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Fallout, because I've never played the games in order. I actually started with Fallout 3.
And then I think most
played them all out of order. So I then, after playing New Vegas, played Fallout 1 and 2.
Mm.
Because I had a shitty laptop that could run them.
Mm.
And now I don't think the gameplay in those are very good. Like, it's just not aged well. It's like it's almost like an old RTS, but it's like it's a role like it's a post-apocalyptic role-playing game, but it's like an RTS almost, which it just the gameplay just didn't feel right.
I mean, that's
but
a,
obviously,
you mean
obviously
it's
a very old game,
and because I've played Fallout 1, I've not played Fallout 2. Even though I own both of those games, I think they were free with Good Old Games at one point, and I just got them.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
And I played Fallout 1 a little bit and tried to get into it because obviously Fallout 3 and New Vegas I somewhat enjoyed. It is difficult to play through.
So the gameplay, I think, was not an enjoyable experience whatsoever, but I think that was purely just because of its age.
I think it's aged poorly.
But,
yeah.
But however, one thing that kept me playing it through to the end was I think the story in Fallout 1 and 2 maybe the like maybe among the best I've ever played in a video game.
That's impressive. I have heard that the story in 1 and 2 is just 2 specifically is very good apparently.
The characters, the villains, they just feel so integrated into the universe. Like, the villains feel like real villains.
Mm. I didn't get far enough to... I don't think I got far enough in Fallout 1 to see the villain.
And you actually... Ones. And when you learn about... Because you kind of learn about the existence of super mutants in Fallout 1.
Mm.
How they were all created by this one man.
Mm.
Originally.
Fallout lore is really interesting. I think Bethesda have got some... I mean, I know that Fallout lore wasn't written by Bethesda. It was written by Obsidian, or at that point, was it Black Isle Studios? Yeah. But, like, in general, both Elder Scrolls and Fallout have some genuinely really interesting, like, lore and background stories and stuff to them that I don't think are really all that prevalent in either of the games. It's interesting. There's generally some interesting stuff going on in them.
And it all intertwines as well with each other. Like, I think, so Fallout 1, I think, is set in 2153, which is not even 100 years after the war.
Mm.
And then Fallout 2 is set in 2042, which is about 40 years before the events of Fallout 3 and New Vegas.
Yeah, I know Bethesda, Elder Scrolls does the same stuff as well. Like, you'll be able to read books in the original Arena. Well, maybe not Arena. I don't know if you could read books in Arena, but in Daggerfall, was it? In Daggerfall, you can read books that explain what Skyrim's like. As a country that still exists in Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, which I find genuinely interesting. I follow a YouTube channel that is that talks about all the weird little interesting bits of lore and stuff that are in Skyrim that is very interesting, and they're all really well connected. And it's not just Oblivion and Morrowind, because I know Oblivion and Morrowind are connected to Skyrim, but even like stuff that happens in Arena has knockback effects on what happens in like the rest of the entire world of Tamriel and stuff. It is genuinely super interesting that they're all really connected, even though they're, you know, different individual games. You don't need to know that lore. You don't need to be interested in that lore even remotely, but that lore does have an impact on what happens in the series. It is super interesting. I can't wait to see in Elder Scrolls 6 what they say about what happens in Skyrim, because there will be books about the stuff that happens in the game of Skyrim in Elder Scrolls.
I mean, 6. I honestly think that game might never even come out, to be honest.
Why?
Oh, 10,000%. There is zero.
Of course it'll come out.
I cannot see a situation in which that game does not come out.
Of course
it'll I mean, come out. They could just pull a Valve, announce it because people want it.
No, there's a difference between Valve and Bethesda in this. Valve literally don't give a shit about what they're doing, whereas Bethesda are owned by loads of publishers and forcing them to do things.
I would probably word it slightly differently, but they don't give a shit about what they're doing. But like ultimately,
the thing is with Valve, like if you look into the history, like they've always had struggles with developing games, like just always like internal struggles within
studios.
Because
it's a free for all. It's because, like, literally...
They don't have structure, yeah.
Valve is a free-for-all. It's you go in, you go, I want to make Portal 3 today. And they go, okay, cool, we'll announce Portal 3. And then 20 years later, Portal 3 won't be done. Because
I disagree with that. He only worked on it for a day.
So
to be fair, I disagree with that as well. They don't announce shit just willy-nilly. But the way they develop games is not, like, conducive to, like, structured releases. But I also think that's probably why most of the time when they release a game, it fucking bangs. Mm. And that's because actually it's enthused everyone that wants to work on it. Yeah. And they don't have a problem with money, so they can allow themselves to work in this insane manner. But I think we're probably being harsh on it. But I think that's just
it's just a different way of working. And it is a difficult way of working. You get into a position where you just don't release games for...
No, but it's, yeah, I know, I agree with you, but what I mean is I think we're being harsh on them if we say stuff like They don't give a shit, or I mean, they announce a game and then they only worked on it for 5 seconds or whatever. I mean, there's loads of evidence to suggest, for example, that they worked on Left 4 Dead 3 for fucking years, and it just, and they were like, this never got to a stage where we felt like it was going to be a thing, so we didn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
I think the joke of Half-Life 3 was that it was an episodic thing, and so like it's kind of already announced before you announced it in a way. Mm. Like it exists, and if you're trying to tell a story like that, I mean, that was the fucking folly there, was like trying to make something episodic when you're working in a structure like that doesn't really seem like the smartest thing to do.
No.
But like with, for example, with Elder Scrolls 6, that will want that. I will happily bet money, and I don't bet. I mean, money, like, but I will before, bet money it comes out.
Like even before the Microsoft thing, like they had ZeniMax Studios pushing them. Like they have a publisher who is like, look, Elder Scrolls 6 is happening because we need to make the money off this shit. And Bethesda aren't a game company that just go, like, as far as I'm aware, Bethesda aren't a game company that just announce shit and then don't deliver them. Like, I don't think they've ever announced a game and they've gone, nah, sorry, it's... I don't think they've cancelled anything.
Well, they have a history of lying about their games.
I don't know if I'd agree with that either, but...
I mean, like, what do you mean? Like, you only need to look at recent history.
Well, you mean, like, about Fallout 76?
Well, yeah.
That's not a history, though, is it? It's like
I also don't know if they lied about that at any stage, but... I mean, but I think...
I don't know, 16 times the detail of Fallout 4 is a big one?
This is such a non... Yeah, but this is all, like, minor details at that stage. I think, it's similar to pulling stuff up for, like... I don't know. I always think development moves so fucking quickly it's a difficult thing to judge on that sense, to say lying. I think that's a different conversation, but again, I think them announcing, I do agree with the notion that they announced Elder Scrolls six
they would agree,
as a make good kind of thing, because I think they knew what kind of reaction
they knew Fallout 76 would be
76 was gonna,
let's say,
get
controversial at the least.
Yeah,
they
device.
Knew they didn't have anything to show for Starfield, so they were like, "Well, what
and
the fuck
they announced
can we
both
show?
At the same time."
Mm.
Then and they were like, "Well, look, and we can say Starfield, but that's like,
but no one knows,
and
what
it's
that
as,
is. It
as exciting as that is, but yeah, exactly, it doesn't mean anything. Because so we say, look, we are also working on that, which they've said they are, and I watched an interview with Todd Howard earlier in the week, maybe last week, I don't remember when.
Sure.
Time means nothing to me anymore, but it was either earlier this week or last week or whatever. He did an interview on IGN, and I was watching it and listening to it, and like, yeah, like it's being made. Like it's, it's not gonna be like the sole focus of the studio until Starfield is done, but they are it is being made,
and
it's one of those things
that makes it.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, it's Elder Scrolls 6 will come, and it's just because at the same time, like, you're talking about, like, for example, like the release schedule of Bethesda, right? Like, one of the things Todd Howard said in that, which I've always assumed anyway, makes, and then he said it out loud. I was like, yeah, that's sort of what I assumed. But the idea of, like, as long as they do work a long time on their games, but they sort of stave off burnout to some extent because they have like multiple different ones they're juggling.
Yeah.
So you do like, you have the release schedule of like Elder Scrolls Fallout. Now you add in Starfield to that. So like Elder Scrolls Fallout, that kind of thing. And so you don't get as burnt out. Right.
Mm.
So like Elder Scrolls 6 will come because that's what that studio is.
Mm.
And it's what that studio always has been. And it's probably what that studio always will be.
And, also,
and now they've got Xbox pushing them as well,
Xbox,
like you say.
Now. Like, Microsoft,
like, there is zero chance
Microsoft
are going to be like Microsoft, like, as much as, and as much as like every studio that Microsoft buys has been like, oh, they just let us get on with it and all that stuff. Yeah, 100%. But you cannot tell me Phil Spencer's not sitting there going, fucking, when Elder Scrolls 6 hits, this is gonna be fucking big.
Mm.
And like, there isn't some understanding that Elder Scrolls 6 is a thing that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. I think there's zero chance it's not coming out. Like you can question whether or not it'll be good. You can question or not whether or not it'll be like genuinely a terrible game, whether it'll be anywhere near as good as Skyrim. Because I'll argue, I think Skyrim has this sort of bizarre magical quality to it, in that it's just unlike any other game that has been released before or since. I can't compare it to anything. It's just really unique, even in its own space. Like, there are arguments either side of like, oh, is Elder Scrolls 6 going to be Skyrim 2? Is it going to be like Oblivion? Is it going to be completely new and different? Is it going to be weird? Is it going to fall into the habit of all of the big triple? Is it going to be cyberpunk? You know, like, there's so many questions that are up in the air with Elder Scrolls 6. But whether or not it's going to release or not, it's such a big, it's too big to fail is the name. Like, you know, at this point, it just will happen. That's like saying I don't think Final Fantasy 17 is going to come out. Like, it will. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, exactly. It's 100% going to happen. That's my opinion on the matter. Like, right. I just cannot see a situation which we don't see in Elder Scrolls 6.
No, it's... unless, like,
even if I do
go
think...
bankrupt.
Sure, yeah. Then Bethesda's fucked in general. But yeah, I mean... I just can't see it. Imagine that, if they just never did an Elder Scrolls 6. I think it would be... don't get me wrong, I'm fine with that, as personally, but, like... just, it would be chaos.
Mm.
It'd be sheer chaos.
There's a reason why all of these... And I think, to some degree, all of these big AAA game names are too big to fail unless the company itself fails. You know, like I mentioned, like, you're never... We're never going to see a world where... there's not a new Mario game going to come out. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, there is always going to be a next Mario game. There will never not be a next Mario game. Like, they will never go, ah, I think we're done with Mario today. No more Mario. Mario's cancelled. Like, there will be one. There'll always be a next Pokemon game. There'll always be a next Final Fantasy or whatever. Like, all of these big names. And the Elder Scrolls... or at least maybe Skyrim, maybe not the Elder Scrolls, but Skyrim specifically now, it is just one of those big AAA names. You know, it's like...
especially in a world now where everything is a fucking franchise.
Everything's a franchise. Everything. Like, I think all of these, I'm looking at the Bethesda stuff now, like, I don't think we're going to look at another a world where there's not going to be another Doom game. Like, Doom's that big a name now, you know? Like, yeah, Wolfenstein's that big a name now. Like, Fallout... like, all of these games, they are never going to end. There is never going to be an end to any of those franchises. Unless Bethesda dies. Which, I mean, you know, it's Microsoft and it's not out of the question.
And even if it comes out and flops, right? Let's say Elder Scrolls 6 somehow came out and flopped, which it won't, but let's just say it did, right? Like, even then, you're telling me Elder Scrolls 7, the reboot, isn't one of the most sought-after games. It's just...
there's going to be an Elder Scrolls 7 after that, and Elder Scrolls 7 is going to be, you know, it's exactly that. Otherwise,
other games would have
just died.
Yeah, 100%. I want us all now to predict the Metacritic for Elder Scrolls 6. Now, this won't be something, this is not a bit that's going to pay off for at least 4 years.
At least 4 years, yeah. We'll know.
I want to know where we all think it will land.
Nine.
So a 90 on Metacritic.
Well, are we going to... are we... do you want like an exact, or is it like 1 to 10, or is it...
No. I want a Metacritic score.
Sure. A Metacritic score.
And then whoever's closest wins in 4 years' time.
84.
89.
Adam. 89. Adam's a lot closer than I was. I'm thinking... I reckon 90.
I think the game's going through some utter development hell right now.
I don't think they're not even looking at it.
I think they're making it, but just at their own fucking pace. They make everything. You know? That's my bet. I think I would say 90. See, I would have said 89 if I hadn't said it, but I'll back it and say 90. But I'll say this.
Do you want to say 89? Because I'm going to say 92. I think maybe 92.
Then I'll back 89. Here's the cheeky bonus thing I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
critics will fucking adore it.
Yeah, right?
They are going to love it. There will be two things that will happen straight after launch.
Mm-hmm.
One.
The meta bomb.
There will be a big old backlash from fans.
Sure. Regardless of what happens, yeah.
There will be a lot of think pieces saying how it's not actually that good and everyone's lying.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That I can almost guarantee that. But I'll back an 89. But do you know what? I think it's going to be very fucking high.
I think it will be in the 90s. I'm saying 92. It probably will be high. I think it might actually be higher than that. Because that's how... Unless it's shit, in which case you are short 89. because you know what reviews are like. I don't know. I genuinely think that it'll go crazy. If it's Skyrim 2, if they develop Skyrim 2...
I don't even think it has to be Skyrim 2. I just think Elder Scrolls 6. I think if you're talking purely on a Metacritic level, I think Elder Scrolls 6 is a big enough thing. I think if we're talking about, like, from a fan perspective, Skyrim 2, I think is both the smarter shout, but also the more risky shout.
I'm thinking from a critic's perspective. If they release...
I'm thinking,
it's Skyrim, but it's bigger and better and has more shit in it, then the critics will give it as high a score as Skyrim, which is mid-90s, right?
See, potentially, yeah. I feel like there's a level of, like, critics will figure... I think critics are more open to the idea of just Elder Scrolls 6 fucking... I don't know. Let's name a... I don't know any Elder Scrolls lore, so I'll just make up a name of a place. Lorik 4. I don't know, right? Mm. I think that's fine, but I think... Yeah, but I think if you just walk out and say Skyrim 2 on a stage, then fucking people lose their shit.
Oh, of course.
But I think critics would be more than willing to lose their shit over Elder Scrolls 6 than they would Skyrim 2, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, I don't expect this to be Skyrim 2. It's probably not going to be set in Skyrim. If it is set in Skyrim, it'll be disappointing. But what I mean is, like, it's Skyrim because, let's be fair, Oblivion had all sorts of fucking janky shit in it. Not that Skyrim didn't, but to a completely different degree. Like, you can't level up unless you're in bed asleep, for example.
Sleeping's important.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I understand why that's the way that leveling up works. And in fact, the survival mode that's come with the anniversary edition of Skyrim, if you turn that on, actually makes you sleep to level up as well. You physically can't level up in anniversary edition survival mode unless you go to bed first. So hey, maybe that's a decision they want to stick by for Elder Scrolls 6. I don't know. But there's also lots of other dodgy shit with Oblivion's leveling up system, which, you know, doesn't work specifically. Like, you I don't remember exactly what it is, but like the world levels up with you, and so you need to be very specific about what skills you pick, what skills you level up, and how many points you put into them. And if you are not playing the game in a min-max kind of setting, as the game levels up around you, you just become weaker. So it is sometimes more optimal to play and defeat the game at level 1 than it is at later levels, you know?
Sure.
Just because the enemies get too strong.
What happens. Yeah. I'm really intrigued. Has there been... You two will be able to answer this question. I won't.
Mm.
So every Elder Scrolls game, are they all set in different parts of Tamriel?
Yeah.
Have any of these bits not got giant spiders? Because I would be very excited for that.
I don't think there were any spiders in Oblivion.
We're going back to Oblivion, boys. It's Oblivion 2. That's what we need. That's my opinion on the matter.
I don't think there were any. There were definitely weird shit in Oblivion, like...
I don't mind weird shit, but just less spiders would be optimal. But yeah, no, I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued to see where they go with it all. I can't fucking imagine. I mean, I could probably, but again, 4 years time, I mean, that's a hell, like, and I'm just saying 4 years off the dome. That's not like Todd Howard and the interview didn't go
four years' time.
But like, you could probably safely assume it'll be out. My gut is saying 2026, but like, if we're saying like that long away, games could be completely fucking different by then. How will the existence of every game being an open world game change what an Elder Scrolls 6 is in 4 years' time, let alone now. Like, in 4 years' time, it could be massively different. We already saw partly what an idea of it could be with Fallout 76. That's not to say that's a mainline Bethesda RPG, but at least an exploration of what Bethesda RPG would look like in a multiplayer setting in that kind of realm.
Sure.
We can already see parts of it. Now, I don't think that'll be Elder Scrolls 6 by any stretch of imagination, but at the same time, like, what will it be? I have no idea, but I'm bloody excited to find out. I'll tell you that much.
I will tell you, I'm looking at, I just Googled Elder Scrolls Spiders, and they were not present in Oblivion or Morrowind. But there were spiders either of those, in then I'm Arena good. And Daggerfall. And then specifically good. The Frostbite spider in Skyrim, the giant fucking...
Yeah, we don't need to describe it. We don't need to describe it.
They, were, they weren't as big in the other games. I don't know if that makes it worse or not.
As long as they're not fucking giant. But yeah, no, I'm interested. But one of the other things, it was just... It's one of the things I've always found, like, people talk about, like... For example, like you're saying, when you read like, lore, quote-unquote, from the older ones... And they talk about Skyrim and all this other stuff.
Mm.
It always blows my mind. I forget it every time. And it's not a big deal, but it's just, it's a fucking, it's just always something I'm like, oh yeah, shit, yeah.
It is just how
GTA 1 has three cities in it. And those three cities are Vice City, San Andreas, and Liberty
are
City.
They? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So like GTA has always been the only city, like it went to London for a spin-off.
For GTA but London, yeah. That's not in the main series.
Apart from that, it's always been... those three, and you can see the generational jumps between them. And I've always found that just quite interesting, how you get to see like how a generation of development affects a city. Like, they're not all set in the same timeline, obviously, but like GTA 5 is contemporary, for example, compared to like 4 and 5 are contemporary compared to Vice City, which is in the 80s or whatever. So there's obviously differences, but like how the generational jump affects what they can do with that city, I've always found that quite interesting. And I always forget that. And then, like, obviously the GTA Anniversary Editions came out recently.
Yes.
And so there's been a lot of just GTA stuff going on. Because SEO, baby. And yeah, someone was talking about it and I was like, oh yeah, of course, I forgot about that. And it's just, I find that really interesting. I always find that kind of stuff quite interesting, you know?
I agree. Yeah. Well, we're talking about games that we've been playing. Charlie, this will excite you a little bit. I'm playing Dicey Dungeons.
Oh, yeah, you are. You sent me a flipping screenshot and I got very excited.
Well, the screenshot I sent you was just of me having all the dice, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm playing Inventor in this screenshot. I've already used up all of my my abilities, and I have and I have four sixes, and also the gadget that all dice become six is available. Which I don't need to use.
Which means you didn't use it. Yeah.
Which means I didn't use it. Which is incredible. I think that's insane. Even looking at that now, playing much more hours into the game, this is a pretty silly screenshot, and I'm still not entirely sure how I've managed that.
I need to see if I can find it. I did look very briefly when you sent it to me to try and find it, but I remember posting an image on my Twitter a while. I'll try and find it, but how are you? And I'll send it to you just because I want you to see it. But
sure.
Yeah, talk to me. Dicey Dungeons, what are you saying?
I'm really enjoying it. I done all of the warrior episodes, just done all of them. The warrior seems really easy, and I don't know why. I'm just like, oh fuck it, I'll just do all of them. I've done every episode one of every character. And I've done all of the warrior episodes, and I've done some of the second episodes, maybe. And I'm on Thief episode 3, and it's really fucking hard. Like, I think Thief episode 3, you have a thing called uptick, which is you start on one die. You start on one. Like, all your dice are on one, and then the next turn they're on two, three, four, etc. And it's so difficult. Like, legitimately, like, it's a 50-50 shout as to whether or not I just die on the first floor. Like, it's like, oh.
Yeah, it's... I've died. Like, my biggest criticism of the game is just, it's the most RNG possible because it is literally a roll of the dice.
But there's lots of manipulation you can do. But, like, early 100%. On, there's just so little manipulation you can do.
Yes.
You've used the two gadgets, right? So
its learning curve is difficult. It does like sort of step on you in a big way. You sort of have to, especially like you say, Warrior to a much really doesn't like it's relatively simple. But the other classes,
the other classes really tend to,
and I think like, but I think it's kind of okay. And like you say, it's not always in this. What I like about the episode structure, as opposed to something like, it's almost like a character select in, say, Binding of Isaac or something like that, where you're sort of picking your poison, and okay, this one you're gonna pick like one character, but they start with a slightly different item, or this one they have like the uptick feature, or you have the have you played the robot character yet? And then you have the like 21 setup type thing, and there's all of that kind of stuff. I really, really enjoy it. I totally understand why. When I first started playing it, I was like, I did the same thing as you, and I was like, oh, this is just smacked me around the face. What the hell's going on here? But
sometimes, like, I'm always aware of when I'm just gonna get flattened. And sometimes, to be fair, I think the witch was the one that I struggled on most, and I don't really know why the witch was the one I was struggling on most. Like, just episode one of the witch character, I just really struggled with, and I no clue why. Like, because you have so much, you have a spell book you can use, and I guess that maybe was more RNG in terms of like. I don't know, though, because, like, the Jester one, I really... Have you played Jester?
Yes.
I really enjoyed the Jester one. I thought it was really interesting and really cool, and I got really into it and started trying to, like, thin my deck, which, I mean, Louis might enjoy, because it's essentially just Solitaire at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know. I found it very interesting.
Go on. If I say the word bear at you, do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the scientist.
Yes.
Yeah.
When that happened, I lost my mind. I was like, wait, hang on. If I do this, does this work? And it did. And I was like, oh my God. It's such a cool thing.
The first time that happened was I was against a super scientist, but I was a warrior. And so I had like 20 shield anyway. So I literally didn't matter.
I love it.
For those that don't know, Dicey Dungeons is like a turn-based roguelike RPG in which you go through, you know, short dungeons. All of your combat abilities are decided by your dice rolls. It's cool. It's very interesting. I think I'm growing a bit. I played a lot of it over the last like few days, so I'm probably a little burnt out on it maybe now. And then, to be fair, I first tried One Step from Eden. Is it One Step from Eden? It's very similar, but One Step from Eden. It's similar because it's a roguelike RPG, essentially. But instead of it being turn-based, it's real-time. Instead of dice rolls, it's cards, sort of similar to the Jester, how the Jester plays, but in live action and with a grid, and it's in, oh my God, it's so difficult, it's so hard. Like I tried to stream it, to be fair, which probably isn't good when the game's genuinely difficult, but I was just lost. Like, it was like, oh fuck, this is so difficult. The soundtrack's incredible. I know I said it to you in private messages and stuff, but the One Step from Eden soundtrack is so good. Like, I know you like the Dicey Dungeon soundtrack.
I adore it.
I have actually turned it off now.
Yeah, you're the worst for doing that. But I understand why you would, but you are the worst.
Like, I enjoyed it to a degree at first, and then, like, after playing it for a certain amount of hours, I was like, I'm just going to turn it off and listen to my own music.
I just want to ask one more thing with the bear thing, just to double check.
Oh, sure.
Have you played as the bear?
No.
Okay.
I assume I'd have to steal it from, because I've done the stealing the powers.
So I came up against the scientist with Thief.
And then it stole
the bear potion. And I was like, wait, hang on. And then you do it, and then you turn into a dice bear. And all of your attacks change into just bear moves. And then when you get more moves from chests, they are a totally new set of just bear moves.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, it was the greatest moment in
my life. Oh, no, I think I saw you do that on stream once.
I can't remember if I did it on stream. I might have. I remember playing it normally once, and it was the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. I love it. But yeah, no, I really like that game. Don't get me wrong. I think it has some issues, and like, if in the pantheon of roguelikes, I certainly wouldn't. If you're tier listing them, for example, it's not a top tier one. It's probably the tier below that.
Yeah.
I would put it in probably the tier below that. I think the top tier you're looking at, you're Binding of Isaac and a couple of others, but Slay the Spire, stuff like that. But like, I think it's so good. I really do love it.
And I think it's very much my. I mean, it's a turn-based RPG, man. The amount of turn-based RPGs I've played throughout my entire life, it's
very fair.
Like, the mechanics are so simple to me. I'm just like, yeah. Well, it's so weird. Like, I find some of the rule sets really difficult and some of the rule sets really easy. Like, even depending on where I am. So I went through all of The Warrior, the six episodes of The Warrior. And, like, one of them... Like, none of them were particularly hard, but one of them was a lot harder than the others. Even the ones that came after it. Why is this so difficult now? What the f... I don't even remember which one it is. But, like, the rule sets are so interesting. I don't know if I enjoy Robot that much. Robot seemed interesting, but it's a bit stressful.
It's very stressful. I like it because it has an amount of logic to it that other ones don't necessarily. So, like, the math part of my brain enjoys that. If I say it's 21 and I'm like, okay, well, the maximum you can roll is 6, so you can just keep rolling until you're... You can just roll for as many as you can until you're... Whatever your total number is, because you can increase it. Whatever your total number is, minus 6. You can start to pick and choose what you want to do and play from there. But the logical part of my brain that enjoys accountancy kicks in there and enjoys that. But
freedom of... I really enjoyed the thief steal the opponent's thing.
I think that was cool.
I do enjoy the freedom of witch, actually. Like, I found it difficult, but I enjoyed the freedom of it. But I felt like there were definitely like spells you were like, oh, I need this one because this one's good.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel as free as I would like it to be. Like, there's an ability where you need to roll a 6 and you get another dice. Hall of Mirrors or something. Now, I stole that one as Thief because I thought, fuck it. I want it and I can steal it from this wizard who's in front of me. Let's do it. But I had it as... like mage every time because I think it's a fixed one that you get in a treasure chest or when you level up or something. I'm not sure exactly. And like I had it every time and I'm like, yeah, but I have to have it every time because if I don't have it, then I lose so much power through not having it because I can no longer cast like so many spells, you know, I can no longer do this so many stuff. I don't know, it felt like there was freedom, but not so much. Same with the Jester one, kind of. Although the Jester one seemed more fun. In that there seems to be a lot of freedom about what you can do in your deck, but really, all you're trying to do is just have, like, infinite turns as the Jester.
Yes.
I can pack it full of random shit, but I just want infinite turns.
One of the things I really enjoy about that game as well is how... It does this more than, say... Like, Binding of Isaac is my favorite roguelike. And one of the things, and this has a similar, it has a similar thing where you have so many different items you can get and different things you can pick up or whatever. And one of the joys of Binding of Isaac is like going through a run and just seeing what you collect and how they combine with each other and like the insane things that that does to your character and the way you interact with the way you fight enemies and stuff. But one of the things I really like about
that I had, because one of the warrior classes has a reroll mechanic.
Yes.
And basically, I had like just three abilities throughout the whole game. One was attack, one was shield, one was a different kind of attack. And I just went through with those just three abilities. They took up the two slots each. And just kept rolling, what, like two sixes and a five. And I was just like, this is, I'm invincible here. Like, I can't, it's impossible for me to lose.
Yeah, I mean, so what I was going to say is, like, one of the things that I really like about that game, that game being Dicey Dungeon, is you can cut, like, because you have the upgrade system, and then you also have, like, you combine new items at the shop, you find new items, you have the upgrade system, and you have the swapping system or whatever. You sort of have an ability, like, as you're going through runs, to start to form what your deck will be, essentially. Like, you start to, like, build what could be, like, an optimal setup. And the payoff, if it actually happens, is, like... So, like, the screenshot that I sent you, which was a tweet from 2019 when I was first playing it, and I've got, like...
You've got 10 six dice.
I've got 10 sixes, and then on top of that, in my items, in my cards, in my deck, I have the flamethrower upgraded. So I have the flamethrower item, which is you can put two dice into it. It combines them to do double, essentially whatever the damage is combined, right? As a single attack. So you put, instead of just putting one six in something and it doing six damage, you could put in two and do 12 in a single attack. But I've got the upgraded version, which means you can do all four. So like all of a sudden in a single attack on the boss, I'm doing 24 damage, and that's in the with a run with the inventor, who's one of their traits in that run is after every fight you have to essentially sacrifice one piece of loot, one card for another card, kind of thing.
I was planning, so you have to sacrifice your equipment for a special one-time power up for each fight.
And so, like, and the entire time, and, like, you, whatever items you have on you in that battle, it randomly picks three, and then from the ones you have, and then you have to, sacrifice one of them. But, like, so, like, the entire run, I'm like, planning this idea where I'm like, okay, if I sacrifice this at this point, if I sacrifice this at this point, and then I build up to the stage where I'll just be able to do such an insane amount of damage in a single turn on the boss fight. And that boss fight I won in literally the first attack or the second attack or something, like, and that's like a boss fight, and the whole run, your runs, you build up to a boss fight at the end, and then you complete the run, complete the episode. And so, like, I was building up to this thing, and I beat it in like one turn or two turns or whatever it was. And it was just the idea of, like, oh my god, my plan actually worked.
I'll tell you the fun thing I did. I found there's a final boss called Drake, not the singer.
It's starting from the bottom.
Normally can only be killed with a wooden stake, and you get a wooden stake in the end. But this was a different warrior run. I think it was the parallel world one, where everything in the game is mixed up in to some degree. So you get the wooden stake at the end, and the wooden stake says deals 30 damage. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, cool. Then you fight Drake, and Drake's ability is he survives death once. This time, so you've got to kill him twice to beat him. So I killed him once. I had my limit break, which is fury as a warrior, which means an action gets done twice. And then I just I was just building for the wooden stake, which had like 30. Countdown 30, deals 30 damage. So I just furied the wooden stake on him and killed him in one hit. And he was, just like, oh.
I think that game, because I like playing card games, right? So as you know, like I've said this on here before, and
you play Yu-Gi-Oh,
I like playing Yu-Gi-Oh, but I just can't be asked with the collecting of the cards and the building of the deck. I like the action of doing it, but I can't be asked with the admin, the faff around it, and also, like, I'm not buying booster packs and all that sort of nonsense. But, like, that game, I think it just fulfills that for me, where I can sort of build decks in a rapid way, and, like, I'm trying to do something as I go. I'm trying to think about the future and how they, like, interact and how I can do stuff. And, like, I would, like, imagine if I had that, like, flamethrower with that many sixes, the flamethrower plus with that many sixes with fury. Like, I've never managed it, but imagine if I did. Oh my god, all of a sudden I'm doing 48 damage in a single turn, in a single hit. But I think it fulfills that, like, want in me, if you know what I mean.
The idea just, of, because like... I agree with you. Like, it's the idea of being like, oh, I can do stupid shit, or I can be creative with like card combos or whatever. But I don't have to go out and collect magic cards. I have to build a deck. Yes. And I don't want to build a deck that everyone else is making. I don't want to be like, because like I personally, I don't enjoy just running the meta. For example, I like making stupid shit, and I'm pretty sure you're the same as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and so like Dicey Dungeons specifically is like, oh, hey, you want to make stupid shit? You can make stupid shit. You've got like, what, 10 items and that's it. You can just make whatever and you're cool. It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I really like it. I really, really like it. And I'm glad you've enjoyed playing it as well.
I think, to be fair, I really wanted to like One Step from Eden because I've heard so much about it, but I found it so difficult. I'll probably give it another go at some point.
Yeah, I think it's worth giving it a second shot.
But because I found it so difficult, I was like, ah, fuck it, I'll try Dicey Dungeons as well then, just in case. Because I know that's turn-based and I've seen you play it before. And I think it's genuinely my kind of wheelhouse. Like, as far as roguelikes go, and you know, I don't know, I played Hades as well. Hades is pretty cool. I'm not sure how into roguelikes I really am. I played Dog Boyfriend Dungeon as well. It's like a bunch of roguelikes that I like, but I don't think I like roguelikes that much. But you know, like,
I mean, you might be more into roguelikes now just because there's more cool ones coming out.
Yeah, sure.
Like, long time, roguelikes were just Binding of Isaac and like FTL, and then like that's it.
Yeah, like Binding of Isaac's essentially like a twin stick shooter, right?
Yes.
So, like,
I mean, it's a Zelda 1 clone, but I mean, it boils down into a twin stick shooter, yeah.
Even Zelda 1 to a degree, but you know, like, and there's the one in Night in the Woods that I find difficult and don't really enjoy all that much, which is very similar to Isaac and like that sort of top down Zelda-y thing. Yeah, maybe now that maybe I like roguelikes now that they're all more interesting or whatever, like Hades and like Hades is cool. To be fair, I've not played Hades for a fucking while, so I must have like stopped being interested in Hades like a little bit after I was playing.
I think this is something I was just thinking this week randomly, but I think people like us go through phases with games, whereas the general public tend to just stick to their game and fucking go ham on it. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
I think we're like, what's the new thing? What's the go? Let's go. Whereas I don't think don't get me wrong, we three of us to some extent have something we go back to all the time, you know? He loves a Bethesda RPG and Destiny, and I love PES and fucking whatever else nonsense I'd enjoy. You know what I mean? Like, we all have stuff that we go back to. You have FF games and FF14 in general. We're all quite interested in what's the new hotness at any one time.
Well, in general, I think that comes from a kind of a love for games and a love for... And I think we talked about this before when it was just us and how I personally like to just try new things all the time anyway. Like, legitimately, like, I probably wouldn't have... I don't know, so you'd play Dicey Dungeons, but I wouldn't have even thought about Dicey Dungeons if I heard you talk about it. But, like, Hades... I don't know, like, I saw it come on Game Pass, everyone was talking about it, and I thought, fuck it, I'm interested, you know? People are talking about it. I could like it, I could hate it. Same with Halo that just came out, and I know we were trying to do that for something on channel, but like specifically I was like, you know what, I wouldn't mind playing the new Halo game just because, hey, I know I don't like Halo, but everyone's talking about it, maybe it's cool, maybe it's interesting, I'd like to be informed, I'd like to know what it is that I'm talking about. I just downloaded the Radiohead fucking Kid Amnesia thing. I haven't played it yet, but I'd like to just go through it and see what the fuck it's about. That's probably also just morbid curiosity than anything else, but
I don't know. That's had interesting reception, at least.
Not seen any reception of it, so I'm very.
I've seen a lot of people go, that was interesting, like, but not in a bad way, but in a genuine like, okay,
sure.
But again, it's a different thing. It's not a fucking game, is it? It's an exhibition.
Exhibition, yeah, that's what it is, yeah. But I do tend to just be like, oh, I'm vaguely interested in this weird new thing that I've heard people talk about. Let's try it. And I don't know. Maybe that's just typically how I am. But like, that's how I play Manager, isn't it? Like,
well, that's very true. Concerning that's very true. But yeah, no, I think you. It'd be interesting if you went back to play Hades. What you'd think of it with like the added benefit of playing a lot of other roguelikes at this point.
True. I think there was a reason why a lot of people loved Hades, though. Although I know part of the reason why a lot of people really loved Hades is the sexy boys. But
well, it's also just very, very good.
It is good. I mean, I enjoy it. Yeah.
It's just an incredibly like competent in that sense. If you want to put it in like, there's obviously vibes we love about whatever, and so fucking Twitter lit up for that game, like you say, sexy boys and whatever else. But like, but also it's just incredibly competent. You know, it's just a very, very fucking good game in that sense. Like, don't get me wrong.
It's sexy very easy to just jump into and play some stuff.
Yeah, but I think I'd be interested to see. Like what you would say now, you've got a lot more other ones under your belt, but it's good. I love Dicey Dungeon. I was always going to play it because it's a developer I really love and it's a composer I really love working together again, and then you fucking throw maths at me and I'm having a good time. But so I'd always play it, but I'm glad someone else has enjoyed it.
Who's the composer?
The composer's Chipsel. She's done. She did Super Hexagon, who's the same developer again. She's done a bunch of stuff. And I listened to her. I listened to her actual music as well. I listened to her actual music as well. She's really good.
I'm on her Wikipedia page now, and it says Instruments Game Boy.
Yes, yes. Welcome to the future.
Cool. She does chip in. Hey, I've seen stuff like that live. It's cool. Whatever.
Welcome to the future. But along the same lines, and there's not much to say about this, so this will be short, because I don't have a lot to say. But I'm gonna say two words now. Well, a word and a number that's gonna prick Louis's attention.
Oh no!
So get hyped, Louis. Destiny 2. I've gone back to it.
Oh my god.
Have you?
Somehow, yes. I start so. My girlfriend and her brother. Oh my god! I'm sorry. I'm looking at your Sanctuary Hills, and even this has fucking artillery up the wazoo.
Every one of my settlements has artillery.
I'm absolutely loving it. Yes, my girlfriend and my her brother, were very interested in playing Destiny 2. They were both super into Destiny 1, and so they were downloading it, and they convinced me to download it again on the PlayStation. So, and I haven't played a lot. I've only just finished a tutorial. They've got a whole new tutorial stuff now, which I didn't know. Which I think.
They got rid of the last one.
Didn't since you played it on stream with Louis that one time, hasn't like the whole game like had a lot removed from it?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was very like the tutorial starts how the old tutorial starts and then spins off into something completely fucking different. Which I was very confused by. Not confused in a bad way. I was just like, I was playing through the tutorial we've all played through, and then all of a sudden new stuff started happening, and I was like, wait, well, hang on, what? I was very confused. But yeah, I don't have a lot to say. I've only just been able to get onto the fuck, what's it called? What's the like main hub called, Louis?
The tower.
Yes, that's it. I've only just got to the tower for the first time.
What character did you make?
So I picked Titan, but only because my girlfriend and her brother started playing it beforehand, and they had each picked one of the other ones. Without thinking about it, they just picked each one of the others because that was what they were vibing. And I was like, fuck it, I'll just pick a Titan to complete the set. But I did pick a Titan. So we'll see. We'll see how that develops. But I suspect I will end up playing more of it because they are like, let's play Destiny. So yes, that will be a running development, Louis. But I feel like I feel like if I'm playing Destiny 2, I should at least inform you.
Am I going to need to teach you all how to do a raid?
I don't know. They like I said, they were really into Destiny 1 and played it like a lot, and were like into all of it. So I'm probably fine. But
you probably will be fine.
I mean, I won't be fine. They'll be fine. If anything, you might have to teach me. just so I'm not a massive burden on the group.
Well, raids have come a long way since Destiny 1, and there's a lot more complex mechanics which take a bit of getting used to and a bit of learning.
We'll see what happens. But again, you may end up having to teach me to just so I'm not a burden, but we'll see how it all develops. But yes, Destiny 2 has re-entered my life.
There we go.
In a way. So I haven't got much to say about it yet, because like I said, I've only just got to the tower for the first time. But yeah. It's a thing that's happening. There's wizards, there's dregs and that, you know, they're running about doing their thing. The hive. You know, it's all kicking off.
Their
it's
words, yeah.
It's all kicking off.
There we go.
Nolan North's talking to me a lot, you know, it's all
interesting. Fuck it, we actually spoke about video games today. What the fuck?
I know. Mad, right?
That is mad.
Bare video game talk.
All the video games. All right, I think that's about it for today. I'm going to go and watch fucking Cowboy Bebop. I'd be very disappointed.
Oh! I've started watching the original.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I'm 2 episodes in. 2.5 episodes in.
What do you think?
It's fine.
Oh.
I need to watch more before I judge it, I feel. I came in with very high expectations.
Yeah.
And so far, I'm like, it's fun, but...
Music's good. It's fun.
The music is fucking great.
Yeah.
Okay. If I was to say one thing to describe... If I was to say one sentence to describe my experience with the original so far, is that, you know, yeah, it's all right. Music's fucking great, though.
There's a reason why, I'll say Cowboy Bebop's not my favourite anime, and it probably isn't even my favourite anime by that director. That said, I have the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack on vinyl for a reason. Because it's
Listen, great. I've always loved Tank. It's the one thing I've always loved about it. I've never seen it, and it's the one thing I've always loved. But, yeah, I'm watching it at the moment. I'm 2.5 in. I fell asleep during the third. It's not what I expected.
What did you expect?
I'm enjoying it. I want to watch more.
What did you expect?
Something better. I don't mean that in a harsh way. I was expecting like...
You were expecting more serious sort of edgy...
Not serious at all. Not serious at all.
No?
But something more. Like, the 24-minute structure hasn't allowed any character development. It's very pulpy. It's very much so far... Oh, really? Here's the characters. They are space fucking whatever you want to call them, and like here is the bad guy for this week's episode.
Yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very pulpy in that sense, and I was expecting like, and because it's been built up in my mind for so long, because everyone's always fucking talking about Cowboy Bebop, and I've listened to the soundtrack for years and all this other sort of stuff. I was expecting to come into it and like how when I first started watching Attack on Titan, and Attack on Titan's like. Here's just it, like when you watch it.
Here's a lot of like, shit. Here's intensity. Oh fuck!
But it's not intensity. It's nothing to do with tone. The tone is exactly what I was expecting, but I was expecting something that had more to it. Whereas right now it's like, here's a geezer who's stolen a dog on Mars. They go and they catch him, and there's not really anything else to it. And again, I've only watched 2.5 episodes, and I've seen like. I fell asleep during the third, so I can't really talk about it, but I know in the third episode, there's a character who I recognize from just key art that exists.
Sure.
The dog that it gets stolen in the second episode, for example, I think just remains in the rest of them to some extent.
Recognize
the dog.
The dog's
so I know they're building stuff up. So like I say, I have to watch more before I even begin saying anything.
I will say it's a bit of a slow burn. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether I agree to some point, because I think the first episode of Cowboy Bebop's really cool. I think it's really easy to get into the first episode. I think it does slow down.
It's cool. I'm not saying it's bad. Again, when I say better, I don't mean this is bad.
I just mean
I was expecting to be like fucking blown away from the doors. Like, and like Attack on Titan blew me away from the doors off. I didn't even particularly like Attack on Titan, but I was like,
no, but that
fuck,
first
okay,
episode
I can
is fucking
see...
ridiculous.
I can see why this is a big deal. Even though I didn't particularly enjoy Attack on Titan, I was like, I can see why this is a big deal. And I can see I might be into it more if I like the spectacle of fucking attacking a giant baby, but like, but I never was like, oh, this is, I'm super into this. But I was like, okay, I can see this. Whereas Cowboy and Bebop, I was expecting to have that same reaction. Whereas like,
there is no,
it felt like I was watching. It just felt like I was like watching fucking anything. It felt like I was watching Hustle. It felt like I was watching anything that's just like, here's something that's it's good and cool. I fucking love Hustle, but I'm never gonna sit here and call it like a top 10, like, if you want to talk about anime, it's its own genre, top 10 fucking TV shows of all time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, people would probably put Cowboy Bebop in top 10, if not top five, if not their favorite or whatever. But like, but again, I realize I am very early into it. There's 20 whatever episodes. There's also the film. So like, I'm really genuinely looking forward to more, in the same way that I love watching Hustle, because it's just good fun. That show is really fucking fun.
Are you watching and, like, soundtrack in English as well?
The soundtrack, no, I'm watching it in Japanese. The soundtrack is also blowing me away. The soundtrack is just so good. And I know it is, because I've been listening to it for years. It's just so good.
The I will say, I know there's a big argument, and I know you're not part of the big argument between English dub or Japanese.
No, but I'm willing to get into any argument. Give me a side, I'll back it.
I don't think it's really relevant, but there's in terms of the argument, the Cowboy Bebop English dub is one of the few where the people who go, no, you have to watch Japanese, will probably go, you maybe watch the English.
I only watched the Japanese because it defaulted to that. I might not, I don't know if they, I mean, it's on Netflix, so I suspect there is an English
version. No, there is an English version on Netflix.
Yeah, whenever I watch stuff on Crunchyroll, like, I kind of usually watch dubbed anime, because it's just that, well, I don't have to read then.
I mean, that's the thing. That is a thing.
With anything on Crunchyroll, because like the default option, or like the option for the most part, is just subbed, I'm like, I'll just watch that. So I end up watching mostly subbed now.
Yeah. There are a few. And to be fair, I don't disagree. Like, sub's fine. But like, there are some anime where I'm just like, okay, no, the dub is better.
Like I have to be honest. Like, I watched, like, out of the two episodes of Squid Game that I watched, the English dub of that is horrendous.
Yeah, I've heard it's not good.
It is horrendous.
I watched it in Korean. I did not watch the English dub of that. There's a difference with anime, though, that I find I'm more willing to accept an English dub of an anime than I am an English dub of a live action thing. Probably more to do with how their lips work in, you know, real life.
Because in anime, they just move like up and down, or like,
yeah. Like, unless they're particularly well animated, in which case, fair play. But like, usually it's just bah, 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 bah. They're not actually saying words; they're just going bah, 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 bah. And that could say anything. In Japanese or English, whereas like in real life, obviously they're saying real
words. Well, the benefit is, like, what I always hate about dubbed and, well, even subbed anime, is that they always make noise, don't they? Like, they're trying to just for no reason, like as if they're just trying to break the silence, whatever. or wherever the voice actor just felt like they had to do something.
I will give you the argument for that is the voice direction is weird. Not necessarily the acting or the dialogue, like, writer, but like, it is the direction. Just like,
what?
There's
just like random noises for no reason. Like, there's no puzzlement or anything. They just make noise. I'm like, why? Why was that in there?
There's a very famous one in video games for Final Fantasy 13, where one of the characters, Vanille, makes weird sort of moaning noises wherever and whenever she's doing anything.
Oh god! So one thing about the deal, right, is that game. Like, so I don't like Final Fantasy 13.
Sure.
But that character, like, made me want to uninstall from the moment I met that character.
That's fair. I will tell you that is not the actor's fault. It's not the game's fault. It's entirely on the voice direction. And the voice director was like, oh, hey, this character's supposed to be weird, so why not just imitate what the Japanese voice actress does? And this woman was like, I guess I can just make weird moaning noises all the way through the game, sure. It's not... Yeah, it's I agree, and I think it's, I mean, one, I think it's too far on vanilla, but it happens in Japanese anime a lot as well, and that's part of the Japanese dubs that I really don't enjoy.
The only thing, I'll get fully involved in the argument, right? Very briefly, and this is all I'll say on it.
Okay.
Never watch the original Spanish rec dubbed. Because it's shit.
Sure.
But definitely watch that sub. That's the only thing I'll get fully invested in. And I think it's just because I've never been so invested in like an anime or a foreign film or a foreign TV show or anything like that to the extent where I'm like, you have to watch it like this. Like, Wreck is the only one where I'm just like, you have to watch the original Spanish version fucking subbed just because, like, the American voices are so bad in it. Like, there is no emotion. Like, it's all kicking off. It's all going to hell. Everyone's screaming. And the American voiceovers are like, oh, no. And you're like, oh.
There are two arguments for the Japanese dubs that I could bring up. One of them is Steins Gate, which is a sci-fi show about a guy who makes a time travel device in his microwave. In the English, he speaks to a, basically in the plot, he speaks to a guy in Japan who is black, and he doesn't, he then makes the thought process that,
Adam, why did the fact that he was black matter? Huh?
Because
why
it matters did, to the to... it matters to his assumptions of the story. If you let me fucking finish, Louis, Jesus Christ. I know you're racist, but not everyone else is.
I'm not racist.
I know, I'm joking. So he goes up to this Japanese guy, making this black guy making the assumption that he can't speak Japanese, and then in the Japanese man's best English voice, yo, what up, motherfucker?
Sure.
I'd be looking for this, like in like Japanese English as well. So like, it's sure. actually the worst. And yeah. this man's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck is wrong with you? There's also an anime on Netflix called The Great Pretender that I saw in Japanese. And it disappointed me to some degree because they didn't continue this throughout. But one of the characters is American and the other character... No, one of the characters is French and the other character is Japanese. And so there's this one scene in the first episode where they're both in the car together and they're both speaking English to each other in a French accent and a Japanese accent in the Japanese dub of the show. And then in their minds, he's thinking French and the other one's thinking Japanese. So you've got a scene in a car where two people are speaking three different languages. And it's genuinely really interesting and fascinating. Like, it's sad that that never continued on throughout the rest of the show. Like, the guy who's French never speaks a lick of French again. But, like, I was just super impressed that, like, oh, holy shit, this is, you know, it's really cool. It's really cool. It's
well, so, I mean, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see how this Cowboy Bebop thing develops.
Yes.
It may also be because it's the only anime I've actually bothered to care about.
Sure.
Like, I'm like, okay, I want to be into this. Like, this feels like it could be my jam. And it is, but just in a lot less impressive way than I thought it was going to be.
That's fair.
So we'll see, like, because I'm a fucking heathen when it comes to animes. So I've watched one episode of Attack on Titan before I realized I couldn't be arsed. I've watched half of Euro on Ice, which I really enjoyed, to be fair. But
Euro on Ice is cool, like, to be fair, yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. I just think that show's cool, but I'm not like fucking diehard about it. Although,
who
if I ever speak
love
to
gay
anyone who's of, yes, if I ever speak to someone who's a bit too macho, I start recommending them Euro on Ice just to see what happens.
You do sing the opening song to them.
No, I don't remember the opening song. I just say, oh, you got
wait,
Euro
is it just a bunch of, I've never seen that. Is it just a bunch of dudes? Roller skate, ice skating or something.
Professional ice skaters, and then there's like two guys, and I guess they fall in love or something.
Yeah, for the most part, let's just that's the easiest way to break it down. Yeah. And then the fucking Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh, which I love, but like, that's fucking that's a children's show, so it makes no difference. Sure. I'm we'll see how it develops. Mm. I'm gonna watch the rest and I'm enjoying it, don't get me wrong. Like, if someone said to me now, like, oh, I've heard that's pretty good, should I watch that? And I'm like, I should be like, yeah, it's really fun. Mm. But like, I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh my god, it's amazing. I'm like, yeah, it's a fucking fun show. But I'll see how it develops. Like I said, I'm only 2.5 episodes in, so I can't really talk yet.
All good.
We'll see. I'm excited though. I need the soundtrack's really good.
Soundtrack's so good.
What? Soundtrack's really good.
Let's go. Thank you very much, everyone who's been sticking around, took a listen. You can follow us, Sometimes Video Games, everywhere, wherever. If you listen on Spotify, you can follow us on Twitch, YouTube, that sort of thing. There's some cool stuff coming on YouTube, in bits and pieces. We should be live tomorrow night, which is Sunday, if you're listening to this live, or tonight Sunday if you're listening to it on YouTube.
Basically any Sunday. If you listen to this in like 4 weeks, live on Sunday. We're probably live on Sunday at 8:30. Do you know what I mean?
Come play games with us. This is a community night, so you can all come and chill.
It's our fun night.
This is our fun
night. Come play with us, teehee.
What he said, but slightly less weird.
I'm gonna leave that as the episode title. Ooh woo.
I hate it.
I don't like it at all.
Thank you very much, everyone, and we'll speak to you some other time. Goodbye.
Been a bit.
See ya.